Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Aki is here. Jacob is late.
Yeah.
But Tim's here. Tim, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. Oh, it just got worse. just already dunking on Jacob because he's barely here.
Oh, fuck. He's...
Yeah, no. And I was doing well until about 15 seconds ago.
Yeah. Good. Good. Glad.
And at this point, I could easily just redo the intro, but I'm not going to.
It's fine. He wasn't here, so.
We're going to leave Jacob Shame in.
Yeah.
That's fine?
Yeah. Special guest joining us this episode, good friend David Ottavino is here.
Hey!
Dave, how are you?
I'm so happy to be here. I'm delighted. I'm pleased as punch. I'm tickled pink. And various other things that are shades of red, maroonish, purple.
Burgeoning microphone influencer David Ottavino.
Boy, oh man, I can't keep the I'm influencing so many things.
You get a Twitter account?
I know, it's crazy.
How many followers?
You know,
do you
what's
have?
Cool about Twitter? I must have probably 20 or 30, I think. Nice. Which is wild. I know, right? Some of them are strangers. Most of them are my aunts and uncles.
I am so sorry.
Just wishing me well. I'm trying to be an influencer, mostly a bad influence on children.
Your hair looks wonderful.
I agree. Your hair looks fantastic.
That's the most important thing. I think everyone loves to hear that. You know what? Everyone on this podcast right now, you guys, your hair all looks spectacular.
Fuck you.
Especially yours,
Aki, especially. Aki, I'm assuming that your avatar is very accurate to the way you look in real life.
Not quite, but...
Luscious, long, raven-colored locks.
I don't think anyone's ever called Aki luscious.
Fuck you!
Maybe they should have.
You wish you could.
Now, to be fair, Jacob's got some good hair on him.
I assume Jacob's hair is completely orange and covers his entire face.
I would believe that.
Not terribly far off.
Jacob, are you going to cosplay as Gritty?
Who says I don't already?
Look, what you do in your bedroom hours are your own business, right? Yeah.
I'm bald, so again, fuck you.
Yeah.
So your hair's fantastic.
That's why it's fantastic. Just... Always comes out perfect, exactly the way you intend it to.
Well, I don't know if that was ever the intention, but sure.
There's lots of room to put a good wig on you.
Exactly. Yeah. You could have any hairstyle you want. You just have to buy it, that's all.
Yeah, that requires work. I ain't got time for that shit.
I mean, when you're as bold as you are, it wouldn't require that much work, realistically speaking.
Yeah, true.
You can just put the work that you would have spent, like, tending to your hair into getting hair.
No, it's cheap and easy. You just cruise the Spirit Halloween stores within the week after Halloween. God. They've got every color style you could want.
They're opening, by the way, this week. They're creeping in. Oh, I've seen the signs.
Season. Ooh, yep. Spooky season's coming.
Now I really want to see Joe with a purple wig. I don't know why. I just want to so bad.
Before the one MAGFest, we actually tried to dye my beard purple, but the beard wouldn't hold the coloring at all.
It rejected it.
Yeah.
It was a rejected color donor.
Did you use a real dye, or did you try using a spray?
We were holiday hair and everything trying to do it. Legit. Oh, wow.
Yeah, you should just spray it on. I mean, it'll come out real quick, but like it'll actually hold for probably about as long as you need it to be.
I mean, Tim's speaking from experience.
Given how frequently I go in public, I could just use spray paint at this point.
Ooh.
No one's telling you not to.
No,
I don't think there's any. There's no warnings on spray paint that says you can't use it directly on your face, right?
No.
I spray dyed my hair orange for prom.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So very frequently you do this, like once every 20 years.
Well, and you never saw it, but I actually did dye my hair red freshman year of college.
Ooh.
It mostly washed out.
I saw pictures of that.
You probably saw it, like, yeah, it was very pink day of, and then it became, like, just reddish thereafter. Yeah. And of course there was me bleaching it for Project Snake, which annihilated any chance I had of retaining my hair into my 30s. Just fucking destroyed it.
And then you went jet black as Whisker in
Red Hood. Oh yeah. No. That was what did I do? No, I wore a fucking hat for Resident Horror because shit was already gone. You're right, I sprayed it. I sprayed it black for Rocco in River City. Yes, mm-hmm. I did spray it black for that.
Yeah, come in colors everywhere.
And I think in off campus, that was actually a hairpiece because, you know, the jig was up. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Tell us more about these films you did. Are they available to purchase anywhere?
Actually, they are. They're available at xstrikestudios.com. That's x-strikestudios.com. And it's my birthday weekend, which would be a great time to inundate the site with orders.
Tell us, what can we buy?
You can buy the entire range, the entire catalog of X-Strike Studios DVDs, which actually is something that you have not been able to do on the website before ever. But there, we got your River City Rumble, we got your Silent Horror. River City Rumble, which, by the way, was recently reprinted for the third time.
Ooh.
Fresh.
Yeah.
Anything new on the new release?
No, not at all.
No, just that new plastic smell.
It's the same as the previous reprint. I just literally reordered it from the same place who had all of the assets from when I first did a reprint 10 years ago. Yeah, anyways, River City Rumble, the most in-demand of X-Strike movies by far. Like, that one, the initial... We ordered 1,000 of each of the first five movies, and that is the only one that ever sold out and then had sustained demand thereafter. So still got some Silent Horror, got some Nth Mile, got some Project Snake, got some Resident Horror. Those last two are the best ones, by the way. Got the rare DVD of our Best of 2010, which is all shit that's on YouTube, but this is that on a DVD to complete the set. And the DVD version of Off Campus, which has Off Campus is on YouTube, but the DVD has all the extras like commentaries and outtakes and other nonsense on it. So
Off Campus features a completely original score composed by one David Ottavino. Yes.
Yeah. I think that's on Bandcamp still.
And that should still be on Bandcamp. Yes, available for purchase.
We were still like, it was still up to buy like the CDs on Bandcamp and like within the last year. And I looked at that and I was like, oh shit, have the people buying this? No, they have not. But it's cool that it's there. So I think just the music is there for digital.
And what should we look for on Bandcamp here?
God, I don't fucking know.
Just Off Campus, I think, right?
Bandcamp, Off Campus, David Ottavino. I don't know. Oh, actually,
this is good podcasting. Listening to us Google things.
I might be able to find out.
I mean, it's really what we do every week. So.
Yeah. It's at X Strike Studio. That's x-strikestudios.bandcamp.com. Is the Off Campus soundtrack. Our one album is in fact up there, and you can buy the digital album for $5 or more.
Hot damn.
We
should play some off that at the end of the show.
Ooh, we can do that?
Let's not.
No, you should. You actually should. There's some good stuff on there. Dave's first and only completely original soundtrack. But
thank you.
Yeah, the theme is a banger.
It's not bad, huh?
It's pretty damn good and really holds up. There's Not Gonna Run is just funny. A lot of them are funny. Ben's Mom's House, that classic song. Mm-hmm. It's funny because they're named after things on the show, like Let's Go Weese, Weese's Dream. Bucket Filler is a classic, of course. Mm-hmm. Weese's Theme Gaiden, Very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Renfair bullshit.
Renfair bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what that song is called.
Tim's 8-bit reggae.
Oh, Lord. Oh,
yeah. I still repurpose that for people's voiceover reels.
Weiss's porno.
Because it was funky.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun stuff.
Oh, we're gonna find something to play at the end of the show.
So. Yeah, no, excellent. there's absolutely some fun things worth playing on there. Which you can hear by watching the show on the Xtric Studios YouTube or purchasing DVDs. I have been not forgetting to plug that for like almost a year now, Joe, by the way. So thank you for naturally bringing it up in conversation.
Yeah, that was synergy.
I figure with the both of you on, you could talk about what you're doing. And what
right
you've
now,
done.
Jack shit. Oh, what yeah. We've done quite a bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Xtric Studios has had some things buried in the production pipeline for some time.
Because of COVID.
Yeah. Yay, COVID.
Yeah. I have a ton of Animal Crossing themed like clay puppets in my basement waiting to be animated into a show, horror show based on the Animal Crossing called The Crossing, of which we basically got one episode done, showed it off at MAG 2020, and then started planning, like, all right, how are we going to do all this? And then
the world exploded.
Yeah. And have not been able to get that going again since, though. I guess, I don't know, maybe it's always, even with things lightening up, having lightened up, it's still just shit's busy when you got the kids, man. Always something. Life
gets in the way. Yeah, cats in the fucking cradle, man.
But the thing is, the big tons of materials and sets and props and like characters in my basement ready to go.
They exist. Like, they are real.
Yep. Yeah. So that will happen at some point. For now, we're pretty much just in a holding pattern doing our old podcast, Triple Radio, which you can find at fatgatsby.com along with our other.
Yeah.
Podcast history post X-Strike.
Just barely holding down that domain name by releasing something once a month. It's barely keeping it active.
I got to clean it up, and I got other things I want to do when I get time.
Ambitions. We've got ambitions, people. Big ambitions.
I'm just realistic about how much time it takes me to execute those ambitions at this point in my life.
The minute all of our very young children hit college, you're going to see an explosion of content. Just wait.
Yep. Yeah. I'm going to be 11 like Jackass 4.
Are you going to have like a new crew come in and have them work with you on it? And then like you guys just step away after a while.
It's going to start that way, but then we're going to get frustrated with them. And we're going to be like, no, fuck the new people. We want all the attention. This is our thing.
Fair.
Yeah.
And we're gonna be very just jealous and spiteful about it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm confused how either of you have ambitions and you're on the show. I am so confused. These are like exclusive. You can't be one and the other. No, you're on here. Your ambitions are dead. I'm sorry.
No, this is not part of my ambitions. This is just something I do for fun.
Speak for yourself. Ooh, this show is giving me some mighty ambitions. My friend Joe Cam giving me the sweet hookups so that I can review recording gear, which is my favorite thing in life and just delights me.
Yeah. Dave is a, I guess you'd say, successful voice actor, right?
Like, successful? Yeah. You had a question mark in there. It's appropriate.
Yeah, that's fair. All right.
No, you know, successful in the sense that it's my full-time job. I've made it my full-time job.
What might we have heard you in?
So right now, in fact, I got a Steam notification. Right now, it's on sale. I think the most recent release. Well, no, the most recent thing I did was for Warframe, was for Digital Extremes' free-to-play shooter Warframe. And then before that, I was in a game called This Is the President, which is the unofficial third entry in the This Is the Police series, starring Duke Nukem himself, John St. John. This Is the President ditches the action gameplay for full strategy, which most critics agreed was for the better, like was the purest realization
of the good ideas of the this is of the somewhat questionable This Is the Police series. That's on sale right now. It's 40% off on Steam right now if you want to give that a try and hear me voice a couple of characters. The Metronomicon is a game that just hit, I believe, one of the PlayStation Plus tiers, one of the newer ones that you can play for free.
Ooh.
Or no, maybe no, maybe it was Amazon Prime giving that away. Amazon Prime gave it away. And let's see, I just recorded some voiceover for an upcoming.
Yeah, don't break NDA.
not breaking NDA on this one. No, this was called Time Melters. It's a little indie game coming out soon. And
what was the game last summer that came out where you were like the GLaDOS of the game?
Oh yeah, yeah, the game last summer that was called Half a Whiskey In, and my mind blanks on things that I that was called Claire de Lune, as yes, in the Debussy right. song. And I got to be the ship's AI, the cheeky over eager ship's AI, which is great. So I'm the voice giving instructions to the player, basically.
I wanted that game, but my PC didn't play.
Oh, really, man? My
PC is shit.
So is mine, simpatico. I was able to crank it down the lowest settings and get it running.
I didn't meet the minimum requirements. I need a new computer. So you're so good.
Oh, I remember early in the show when you were like, you had the strong PC and we would go to you for PC reviews.
But I haven't upgraded my computer in, you know, that entire decade. So, yeah, now everyone else has bought new computers and
Jacob, do you have a computer or are you still just laptop?
Still just laptop.
His laptop is probably better
Joseph,
than my fucking computer.
Joseph, the laptop is a computer.
Well, a PC versus a laptop. You know what I mean?
My gaming PC is an old, like, decommissioned Office Dell Optiplex with a very low end graphics card chucked in. And I'm starting only now this year, like, new release titles are really starting to struggle. And I really got to turn the settings way down. But it's taken good care of me for the past 2-3 years and was very modestly priced.
Yeah, mine has been failing me for the past, like, 3 or 4 now. But it lasted a good long while. But it's new games, just, you know, I can get the little, you know, like, visual novels and shit, but I can't play any of the actual games anymore.
She can't play any of the good porn games.
No, I can still play a good chunk of those, because lots of those are still made on XPs.
That's speaking of later on tonight.
Ooh. Yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah, we got some porn to talk about later.
Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure that one can be played on XP. What
the fuck is this game?
I am checking right now to see if it is.
Something has Tim's attention.
Nope, this one requires a Win 7, but it requires like the most base Win 7 ever. The processor it even needs on it is, you know, you could have gotten on your Win.
Drop it, bitch! Yeah.
It almost can be played on Windows XP.
Runs on a Pentium 4.
Now, I was casting an eye at my Steam collection and realizing that I have no idea how I can ever find anything in it anymore.
Oh, good lord.
Because there's just so much, and like, when I reliably played things on PC, like that, when that was like my primary console, it was like very well organized and I knew where things were, and now it's like not that. I have like 145 games under uncategorized.
Oh Jesus.
Like the last time it looks like I was diligently doing this was 2019.
Oh
so yeah, that was 3 years ago.
With all the storefronts now, my collection is incredibly divided up amongst, you know, Steam games and Epic Store games.
Yeah, I don't know where did I get this on PlayStation Plus? Is it on fucking Game Pass? I don't know.
I mean, that's a good segue into some news.
All right.
If y'all want to stick around for news, Tim, I don't know how much time you have. Are you good to do news with us? Or
yeah, sure, I'm good. Cool. Dave's good.
Good.
Okay, we're good.
No, yep. I do not. My children are in the backyard right now roasting s'mores on a campfire because we are camping out tonight. And I get to skip the part. I know, right? Oh, and we did it. I stopped at the store, me and my 5-year-old, and we were like, let's get custom stuff. and we got like, what if it was chocolate chip cookies instead of graham crackers? Let's get those. What if it was brownie brittle instead of graham crackers? Let's get those. Yeah.
Did you get like the marshmallow fluff?
She picked out like these big, like campfire marshmallows that are round and flat and were like multicolored and were bullshit cherry and blueberry flavored. But yeah. She's got 5 year old that has zero culinary taste. We gluttoned it up and stuffed ourselves full of melted marshmallow, and my wife's getting them to bed in a tent while I talk to y'all. So I'm staying here in the air conditioned house for as long as I can.
Cool. So we could stretch this out. quick shout out. No Time for Games dropping 50 bits in chat. Thank you so much. Always love having you here. PlayStation Plus was mentioned. Bunch of games getting added to the premium and extra tiers on August 16th. Yakuza 0, Kiwami 2, Dead by Daylight, Ghost Recon Wildlands, Bugsnax, Metro Exodus, Everspace, Uno Madness, Monopoly Madness, Monopoly Plus, and Trials of Mana.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting addition.
I'm excited about that one.
But what tier is each one of them on, Joe?
They're all on just the standard extra tier. Yeah.
Oh, good. Nice. That's good. Okay. Yeah, they're all PlayStation 4 or better, so that makes sense.
Yeah, people are pretty pissed off that there's nothing added to classics.
Of course they are, because if they weren't, it wouldn't be the internet.
I mean, how long has PlayStation been doing this? This is what, its third month, and there's still not that many PlayStation 1 or PSP games.
Yeah.
What, like 3 PSP games?
Yeah.
Has the emulation improved for PS1? And because PS2 was just the exact same PS4 wrapper, right? But Digital Foundry was not pleased with the PS1 emulation.
No?
No. Reportedly, some of it had that same, like running the PAL versions at 50 hertz, like the PlayStation Classic did. For a lot of games, a suspiciously high number of games.
I'm pretty sure it's the exact same. So the only PlayStation game they need to add is Legend of Dragoon. Yeah, once it's on there, they don't need anything else on there. That's perfect.
Really, the Earthbound of PS1.
Yeah,
that is still to this day my number one game of all time. Wow. I fucking love that.
You know, I never played it, so I can't criticize the decision.
It's so good.
I remember the water effects looking really good, because I think the water was like CG, like streaming video, while the rest of the game was just like standard graphics.
That's some crazy bullshit.
Yeah, is bananas. Like in Final Fantasy VII, things would go like from the game, and you would see the screen get all grainy, and it would go into the video motion. Crazy shit.
And for the time, the CGI was really, really good too.
There's a ton of
very few cutscenes there were, anyways.
There's a ton of PS1 games that I would love to play in an easy to manage high resolution wrapper like that. But man, you know, I don't want to play them at PAL rates.
Nah.
I'm not a European. I'm not a second class citizen. I'm an American. I don't have health, damn it.
I'll get a PS3 that plays all PS1 games.
Yeah, but not in a high resolution wrap. I want them sharp. I want those sharp PS3 polygons.
Upscaled it. No, nothing.
The PS3 offered some like a smoothing filter.
Yeah.
And I say this one as someone who played a lot of PS1 classics on PS3. They're not bad. There's nothing. It's an accurate, reflection of the original game. But I'm ready to go for some high resolution. I want some sharp polygon edges, because those original resolutions are chunky.
Well, write down a list of all the games you want, send it to Sony, and wait for them to ignore you.
I want Incredible Crisis, damn it.
Oh, wow, yeah, that would be a good one.
Yeah,
I just wish they would start bringing back their old games and putting them on Steam.
That'd be cool. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I like. Yeah,
that'd be cool. That'd be easy.
I'd totally buy a number of PlayStation games if they were just on fucking Steam.
Do like a PlayStation Museum collection and
Oh yeah,
or like Intelligent Cube, Ape Escape, Legend of Dragoon, you know,
as more and more first party Sony games start hitting PC, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. But again, Sony doesn't care about their legacy.
Getting any of these companies to release their old catalog in an accessible manner is eternally a pain in the fucking ass.
Yeah.
What I'd like if I could just offer to buy Legend of Dragoon IP from Sony. It can't be worth much anymore. They haven't fucking done anything with it for like two decades.
I mean, they re-released it on PS3 for people to buy, so they didn't completely ignore it. They could still technically make money off of it.
Yeah, they could sell it to me. I'd give them $50.
I think they would want a little more than $50.
Okay, I could.
Oh, there's
I
only one way. 55.
Yeah, one way to find out.
Well, each of these games were $5.99 on PS3, right? Like every PlayStation 1
like
classic.
Buying it 10 times. It's got to be
further,
right?
We have the technology. The time is now. Children are our future. Sony can, should, and must release their entire back catalog on modern platforms.
If they just release it on Steam, it'd be great. But
watch it being like an Epic exclusive.
I could so picture that, and that makes me so angry. Shit.
I'll tell you what, if a PlayStation 5, I would be in, you know, a fucking online queue for a PlayStation 5 right now if, like an Xbox Series X, I could just pop any old legacy PlayStation disc that I own into it and have it run, because I own a fuck ton of them and I'd like to enjoy them again.
Well, you can't pop any Xbox game in. There's only like 700 games available.
Only 700. I know.
I know it very sounds like a lot, but there's over 2,000 that aren't.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's playable. A good point.
You know, I'm still confused why they haven't just made it to where it can emulate all of them instead of just one. Because your computer can fuck. They have emulators for Xbox One games. That is all of them. It just emulates the fucking Xbox. You can get that on your PC. Why the fuck can't they put that in an Xbox?
Like, ask Microsoft's lawyers.
I mean, some of it does have to do with like legalities surrounding even like making those games available and who owns the rights and licensing and that shit.
Well, if it's emulating the software so it could read the disc, if you own the disc, they're not re-releasing the game or anything.
No, but it's there's probably some legalese in the licensing that you're now playing it on a different system, and
I'm sure there is that. But check this out. Look, if anyone had the cash to set a legal precedent for this, it would be hear me out, because I'm thinking this through. This doesn't mean that you have to digitally re-release your catalog, and to be fair, this would be an investment in making a stable emulator that, you know, could run most legacy titles without needing a lot of bespoke tweaks. So this is something that would probably work better with original Xbox games and maybe not yet with 360 games. Sure. But I really don't, I'm not sure what the legal issue would be if you built an Xbox emulator into the at system level, sold the games digitally that you had the license for, that you were able to relicense to sell digitally, but leave the rest a gray area. Like, if discs happen to work, if you pop them in, who's to say?
Yeah, that's not Microsoft responsibility. Can do that. Microsoft sues Microsoft for their Xbox.
Exactly, right? Emulator. I mean, old license holders, like what third party, like, is IDOS going to come and be like, hey, the Xbox version of Fear Effect can be used by people that own it, and so you owe us what? Nothing. You know? Like, What's anybody going to do? It's one thing if you want to re-license something to resell it on a digital storefront. And obviously that's why you would do this, because that's where the revenue is. This would just be this is purely a gesture of goodwill. So I know that there's no revenue in it for them.
Yeah, because like they don't go after, like, I don't think anyone really goes after the emulators that you can get on your computer that are like, okay, you know, now you can put your disc in and you can play your Xbox game on here. What always ends up getting sued by companies is the ones that are like, here, download the game that we don't have the rights to. That's where they get in trouble. It's never, oh, there's this emulator. No, that never happens. games.
No, because they need to steal the emulators to emulate their own games.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. I remember that. Oh, yeah. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, it'd be nice if I could just pop any 360 game in my Series X and have it work. There are so many games that I have that aren't playable. Like, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 full shelves full of games.
Can you name a few off the top of your head, Joe, that you wish you could?
Afro Samurai, Alpha Protocol, Army of Two, The 40th Day. I could just read the top row.
Well, you sold me on Alpha Protocol, so we're in. Fuck it.
Blaze Blue, thing. Blur.
Splinter Cell Games.
Zep Saga, The Crash Games, Legend of Spyro.
There has to be. There's a Blaze Blue available.
Oh, there is. You can get it's that just, on Steam. Yeah,
it's just not the old, the original one. Anyway.
Blur. I stand by Blur.
This one, I never had Blur. I always wanted to try Blur.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it was.
Also good is the news that Multiverses broke the 10 million player milestone in only 3 weeks.
Wow. That's impressive.
So, a lot of players, player.
Yeah. Ooh. A lot of people playing that one. I'm waiting for Rick and Morty to come out. Then I think I'll drop a few
And then
bucks
I'll uninstall
for,
it.
No, then I'll drop a few bucks for some character tokens and I'll play away, but...
Now, I haven't been following Multiverses
Fall
very
into the
much,
abyss
but if it's at all like the development of Nickelodeon's Brawler, like, is there voice acting in this, or is that, like, Nickelodeon something that's coming later?
No, it's much better position than that game was, because that game was just kind of, like, thrown out there with, I don't want to say minimal... They are clearly... Multiverses is built, you know, it is a free-to-play thing. It is built to... get out there and be added to and make money. Like there's some stuff behind this. They want it to have a lengthy tail and it is built as such.
It's pretty fun too. I've played it recently.
I fired it up, but I only dicked around in like the training mode, like briefly. And then,
I only play the AI. Other people are too difficult.
Yeah. I've only really done bot stuff in the game too.
You can get all the achievements in bots, though, so that's fine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's just I struggle against real people because real people are good at games and I'm not.
Well, it's a good thing this is 2v2, so you just have to find someone that will carry your ass scrub.
Your ass.
And that isn't me, Joe, just before you think about it, because I'm fucking
Carnage is in love with the game.
Carnage!
Yeah.
Carnage.
Should play.
He's always like, hey, do you want to play Multiverses? I'm like, I'll play Fall Guys.
Carnage, I will play Multiverses with you because it's fun. I'm bad at it, but
anyway, some Game Pass rumors. There are rumors abound that it's possible Elden Ring might be coming to Game Pass.
Oh, that would be wild.
I've wanted to play that game since everyone was talking about it for like over a month in here now.
Yeah, we did talk about it a lot.
Yeah, there was a good 5 or 6 episodes where just every week was an Elden Ring image.
Yeah. If it comes, I am totally playing that. I'm going to be like, I can't play anything else. I'm playing this and I'm going to finish it.
Yeah, and then someone shared an image of the Soul Hackers 2 Xbox store page that mentioned Game Pass on there. So people are wondering if we might see an announcement at Gamescom that's coming to Game Pass.
And I hope that happens too, because I wanted to play that. So
that would be huge, from Atlus having ignored Xbox for the entire Xbox One generation to now bringing the Persona games over and possibly this to Game Pass as well.
For a minute there, I actually forgot about the Persona games.
If it's coming to Game Pass, somebody brought them money.
A lot of money.
Yeah, like it's not an accident. I mean that, but that if Microsoft is bringing the money, that is smart on their part to try to get more of those JRPGs onto their platform, because that has traditionally been a problem.
Yes, indeed. I would love to see them throw Mistwalker some money and create a Lost Odyssey 2.
Aren't they done making games?
I know a couple people who have
thought they were
clamoring for a Lost Odyssey 2.
I mean, you're never done.
Like Ric Flair, you're never truly done.
That's exactly what I was about to fucking say.
I love the rumors that he's like, I wish I didn't say it was my last match.
Yeah, they would have given me a ton of money to wrestle in Puerto Rico.
Fucking asshole. Yeah. Just go unconscious twice during your fucking final match. And
Too much time talking about Ric Flair already. Move on.
Yeah, true. Marvel's Midnight Suns has been delayed to, quote, later this fiscal year, which means sometime before March.
Yeah. Gotta be one of those juicy, like, February releases. Get that in before the books close.
Yeah, another delay. Dotemu has confirmed that Metal Slug Tactics has also been delayed to 2023.
God fucking damn it. Whatever. Moving on.
That was a much more visceral reaction than I was expecting for that.
I'm really excited for that game. It looks really cool. I love Metal Slug. I love tactics games.
I know right before we went live, Thimber dropped some news in our Discord that Nightingale was also delayed to 2023.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
What is that?
It's a game.
Okay.
Oh.
That's news to me that it exists.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of things that people didn't know existed, did y'all hear about that Super Punch-Out Easter egg cheat code that was discovered?
Holy shit.
After 28 years, it was discovered this week.
Yep.
That's wild. That's just that's terrific news.
It is bonkers. It requires holding some buttons on the second controller, hitting start on the first controller, and it brings up like a character quick select so you can take on any of the fighters from any of the circuits. And on top of that, there's an additional cheat code that you could put in that allows player two to be the bad guy.
That is insane. That is like every little brother's dream.
Yeah.
From being handed a controller and being like, yeah, you're controlling the bad guys, kid. Sure. but it turns out you actually could have been all along. I mean, I got to play with that. Like, that is just wild.
It's confirmed that it works on the Nintendo Switch Online.
Yep.
So it's something that's hard coded into the game.
Yep.
Obviously, like some kind of developer shortcut for bug testing, something like that. But the fact that it hasn't been found for so long blows my mind.
Yeah.
And that it's a pretty simple button combination. It's not like some ridiculous input. It's something you got to do on the second controller.
Yeah,
though,
that's
right?
The thing. Yeah, it's not a controller you'd usually touching while playing Punch-Out.
Right, because it's a single player game.
You got to think some kids like found this out accidentally one time.
Yeah.
Could never replicate it, and they're like, "No, I swear to God, guys, you can fucking do it. I swear."
Yeah, yeah. They're talking it up on the playground, and everyone's like, "You're full of shit."
I'm telling the teacher.
Yeah. So none of us have actually gotten to sit down and try this yet.
No, not yet.
I'm super excited. I'm hoping I can get one of my kids to try it with me. I don't know if they'll care too much.
I'll force them.
Jesus. Hey, you're the parent. I mean,
God damn it. Abuse your children, David.
I didn't say abuse. Just force them to play a video game. Sit them down, put the controller in their hands, and be like, listen here. You are not leaving this chair until we get this cheat working.
It's Sunday morning, kids. Time to go to church. Church? What are you talking about? Yes, we are sitting down to the altar of Nintendo.
Amen.
Amen.
All right, well, that's the news I have. Anyone else have any news to talk about this week?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, River City Girls 2 got delayed out of summer, but that's not like
another delay. God damn it.
Yeah, I mean, given how close we are to the end of summer, I was kind of like, are you guys sure you're releasing this? And sure enough, it's been delayed a little bit, which is okay. Make it wonderful.
Hockey, any news?
Not really. I mean, I watched some movies this week, but that's about it.
Anything good?
Yeah, I finally watched the Suicide Squad movie, the good one.
With John Cena?
Yeah. Yeah. That movie was amazing.
Yo, we gotta get you the X-Strike movies to watch.
Oh, you know, you don't have to do that.
I mean, if you get them to me, I will watch them. I don't care.
Tim, that's more people watching the movies. Come on.
I will. If you can get me movies, true. I will watch movies and I will review them even. I do.
Oh, that's even worse.
Get him those movies. I'll give you my copies.
Okay, that works. I'm not against this. I do not mind. I have a massive movie collection, and I'm always happy to add more to it.
I can send you a box of movies if you like.
Sure, fuck it. Why not?
Yeah. Jacob, have you seen X Strike stuff?
I own a bunch of them from that 1 year I went to MAGFest.
And oh, thank you.
I don't know if I ever watched them.
That's fair.
Which is standard for my DVD collection.
Yeah.
Now, if they were on Vudu, you would own them, right?
Well, yeah, of course, but and I still wouldn't watch them. But you know, they're there for the day when I'm going to watch them. Though
I totally get that because I have DVDs and Blu-rays right next to me. I haven't watched. I've been watching everything online. Still haven't watched any of these online or off, for that matter.
Speaking of movies, guess who picked up their Sonic 2 steelbook from Best Buy? Nice.
Oh, God, it could only be you.
I mean, it was a good-looking steelbook, I will admit, because Joe show me it on the website.
I will be purchasing a copy of that this weekend because my child now knows it's out and was trying to look it up on Roku, but, you know, it's on services we don't have or otherwise we need to rent it, and he loves that movie, so...
Yeah. What is Sonic 2 on? Jacob, what
Paramount
streaming
Plus. Paramount Plus.
Yeah, Paramount.
I mean,
I know.
If you want to watch it, just let me know.
We got like a month-long trial to Paramount Plus, like, just in time. I was showing my nerdy daughter the Star Trek films, and we needed Paramount Plus to watch Star Trek Generation. But and that's just right when Sonic 2 dropped, so we did get to watch it there, and nice. We all enjoyed it. I'm all here for Ben Schwartz flipping a little bit of Parks and Rec's John Ralphio into his Sonic character deliberately. I love it. I'm here for it.
Raider Biz is saying if you have T-Mobile, you can get a year of Paramount Plus for free.
No, I don't have fucking T-Mobile.
Anybody got T-Mobile? No?
No,
I do.
There you go.
All sorry. Right.
Enjoy your Paramount Plus. Paramount
Plus, so.
It's fine. I will go and purchase a Blu-ray. There is a path to success.
Well, if you go to Best Buy, pathway to do this Steelbook here. Is really nice.
I will be in a Best Buy tomorrow morning.
What are you getting?
Well, I bought some, Dave, this is what I was asking you about earlier in the week. I'm buying some very expensive noise-canceling wired headphones for my wife to use at her work to drown out the other dipshits in her office.
Yeah.
But she...
I hope that those work out well. I've only ever owned one pair of noise-canceling headphones. They were older. Like, I found them at Goodwill for $5. Yeah. And... they didn't seem like they actually canceled any noise.
Yeah. At a certain price point, they definitely do start doing that.
Yeah.
She spoke with some coworkers and got a recommendation. It's the pain. So because of
with the asshole, with the loud coworkers.
No. Other people. But this is what you need to hear to not hear me. No, she works. So she works on sensitive but not classified government documents.
Yes.
That is the terminology they use. So she cannot bring any kind of wireless communication device into her work at all because it could be it is a security threat. This is how, like, whenever you hear about how information was stolen, how data was stolen from a large corporation, that is how somebody brought a wireless device into one of these, like, lock boxes, as it's called, or they got a USB drive in there and they offloaded information off of those computers and put it on the internet in nefarious fashion. So anyways, in conclusion, she needed headphones that were wired, which is very hard to find after a certain point, because everything is just Bluetooth, 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 Bluetooth. But yeah, anyways, I'm getting those, so I'll also get Sonic 2.
Nice.
Yeah.
Jacob, any news from you?
Sonic the Hedgehog 3 movie watch has started.
Yeah, that's like what next holiday is when that's supposed to come out?
Actually, they announced the date for it. Aki, get ready. December 20th, 2024.
2024, excuse me. Yeah, it's.
I'll forget it exists by then, but okay.
Aki, get in line now.
But the real news, I think, is that it pushed the unnamed Smurfs music animated musical out of its previous spot. So
I'm fine with that.
You will have to wait longer.
Its spot shouldn't exist
for the untitled Smurfs animated musical.
Well, son of a bitch. At least we don't have to make a choice that Friday.
Sorry, I had to bring things down. Yeah, you'll have to wait until till Valentine's Day of 2025. Get your date
not
now for the untitled Smurfs animated musical.
God, 2025. I don't even know if I'll be around by then.
The trouble is,
you didn't have any plans for that Valentine's Day, and you're just going to sit in a theater by yourself.
Yeah, the trouble is that Sonic is now opening against James Cameron's Avatar 3, so it's already sunk.
That's ballsy.
Yeah. I don't know. It might actually put up a good fight being there.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe with the second Avatar, people realize it's not that good. And, yeah.
I'm rooting for Sanic.
Sanic. Gotta go fast.
Sanic is also in a Fall Guys this weekend.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, you can buy... You can buy costumes for 800 show bucks each, which translates to about $8. You could buy bundles of two characters for like 1200, which is, I don't know, I can't do the fucking math, less. Whatever. But yeah, you could buy characters. They have Sonic, Tails, Knuckles, Robotnik, and then on its own, a Super Sonic. Mm. Yeah. So there we go. Should we dive into reviews, folks?
You said we didn't have more news. All right, yeah, we're good.
New Fatal Fury. Anyone excited for
Fatal Fury? Jesus fucking Christ, there was all that news at fucking Evo. Yeah, they announced Mark of the Wolves 2. New Fatal Fury.
Nice.
Okay.
Cool.
Dude, Mark of the Wolves rules.
Do we know that it's a follow-up to Mark of the Wolves?
That, I believe that is presumed, given the timeline. I could not find anything concrete from the actual announcement that indicated that, but that seemed to be the conclusion.
But Rock Howard is the character that they're featuring in the artwork.
Many people, that was the conclusion many people jumped to. They've just announced that it is greenlit. Presumably, like, they just released King of Fighters 15. Presumably that team is now... you know, partially working on DLC, but mainly working on developing the new Fatal Fury, which is cool. They did basically announce Tekken 8, which is cool. Tekken 7's been going a long time. Very popular. People love their Tekken. I enjoy watching high level Tekken for sure. more than I like playing it. They announced, we talked about Bridget on the Tuesday show, in Guilty Gear. Couple characters for Street Fighter 6, Jury, and a new character, Kimberly. Just cool stuff.
Nice. It was an eventful Evo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the E3 for fighting game news is Evo.
Nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's dive into these reviews. Of the two of you, who wants to kick things off? So I know
Dave. We got two microphones. I'm sure we'll kind of go back and forth here a little bit.
We are each reviewing a microphone.
Yeah, into it right now.
I'll go through the introductions for the two of them. David, you are going to be talking about the Neat King B2 Cardioid Solid State Condenser XLR microphone, available on the neatmic.com store for $169.99. Whether you're a musician, podcaster, or streamer, the Neat King B2 offers outstanding versatility and incredible sound quality. Its large diaphragm, 34mm centered terminated true condenser capsule design is ideal for applications requiring low noise and high sensitivity. In addition, the King B2 comes with its own custom designed shock mount and pop filter, allowing the Neat King B2 to become one of the most useful and commanding mics in your hive. Haha, get it?
Oh.
And then, Tim, you're going to be talking about the Neat Bumblebee 2 Professional Cardioid USB Condenser Mic, available on the neatmic.com store for $99.99. The Neat Bumblebee 2 is a versatile and easy-to-use USB condenser microphone that offers professional quality audio output. It's the ideal solution for voice conferencing, content creators, streamers, podcasters, gamers, vocalists, musicians, and voiceover artists. Catch a Neat Bumblebee 2 and let your recordings take flight. So awful puns on both sides of the fence.
Yeah.
Tell us about these mics. Right. What's going on with them?
Yeah, well, for just so we realize, Dave is the professional voice actor here. and professional YouTuber, right?
No. That's right.
YouTuber
on the side. I just released a microphone review. That's sponsored content. A microphone company sent me a mic to review, and I did it.
Yeah. So you do a lot of these.
Yeah.
But I was gonna say, just Dave is a voice actor. You actually do have a fucking hive of microphones.
I do.
You go out of your way to, you know, purchase microphones, try them out, dare and compare, and put your thoughts out into the world.
Yeah, which is what I was hoping to do a little bit on the show, but
And you still can. By comparison, I do this show.
Yeah, and other shows.
And other shows,
yes. Microphones for a good long time.
Yes.
You've been talking into microphones.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, the microphone that this is replacing, so yeah, points already up there.
There you go.
This Bumblebee is replacing a microphone that I bought, you know, many, many years ago.
The Audio-Technica 2100, yes? ATR 2100.
Yeah, I believe that's the one. Whatever. Yeah, you recommended to me. It was like $50. It's been like my go-to microphone, just like my desk microphone for
ATR 2100 USB. I believe.
Okay, it's on the other side of the room at the moment. I'd have to
get. I've got it right here, Tim. Jeez, there it is. Right, that's the one that you've been using, right? Yeah, that's
yeah, okay. Yeah. And it's still, you know, it's been a good microphone though.
Should I put you back on video, Dave? Should I just?
You know, it sits on my desk and it is very directed, I think. And Dave constantly bitches at me when we're recording our podcast about, you know, me being too far from the microphone and such. And
it's just because there's a technological reason for that. Yeah. And there's a reason why this other microphone, like it's the neat microphone you're using now is a fundamentally different technology that you can be further away from.
And I imagine, yes. And that's the thing, like while I'm doing, like if we're watching something and on podcast, something I do tend to recline at points, or, you know, if we're on Discord watching wrestling, just like hanging out, you know, I'll get back in my chair and people are like, oh, can't hear you. And this, I'm pretty sure you can hear me if I'm leaning back in my chair. It's not as good, but I can do it.
Yeah.
Are you fully reclined?
I was for a second. No, I'm
fully fucking erect. Yeah.
No, but I'm also not like hunched over the microphone. I'm not like right here on top.
Yeah, you're not on.
No, I'm not on top of it. No.
On top of things is Victor X, who just subbed for his 9th month. Pat, thank you so much for dropping by and subbing. We love having you here. Hugs your way. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine. It's all good. Yeah. So the mic just has a much better range for me and what I use a microphone for here at my desk. In letting me, you know, not have it right directly in my face, though that certainly helps, you know, if it is. But I think it's going to make a big difference. It seems, you know, I think it already has. Dave, do I sound better?
Yeah.
Okay. See,
you sound good.
I sound good.
You sound different.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh no.
And that's because it's a different.
You downgraded me from good to different.
Well, the thing is, you did sound very good on your existing microphone when you could get your mouth like an inch away from it, because that's how it's meant to be used. And if you can't always do that, then yes, this is a much better choice because you sound better more of the time.
Yeah. Yes. It's giving me more consistency. Like that other microphone really wasn't made for what I was using it for. I just kept using it for that because the alternative, like I don't like big bulky gaming headsets. And I don't always like to hook up my freaking mixer with, you know, an XLR and a mic stand in my office here just to do what have you. And I'm certainly not going to
do this bullshit
to, you know, I'm not going to use the internal on the my webcam because that's disastrous. But this works pretty good. And I actually know that it sounds good because there's a big button on this microphone in the middle and it has three different modes you can switch between. So I can adjust the volume. Like I run my headphones through the microphone. So I can adjust the volume that goes to my headphones from the microphone, which is just the audio that comes off of my computer. It's how I hear you guys. I push the button again and that adjusts like how much volume goes out from the microphone to you. So if I do consistently sound a little bit quiet, which I did when I first joined the show on Tuesday night, Joe, but Brooke helped me with a little bit of sound checking. I just turned the knob and it gives me a little more input to the computer. And then I push the button a third time, and there's a little ring around this button that changes color, so I know what's what. I'm not just guessing. And I can actually raise, I can hear myself in my microphone, or in my headphone rather. So I can actually hear what I sound like going out of the microphone, just kind of like by pushing the button, turning up the knob and being like, okay, do I sound good? Do I sound okay? Do I sound too far away?
In just real like, time, right?
In real time.
Zero latency monitoring. That's good.
Yeah. Zero latency. So yeah, I know what I sound like right now. I actually didn't need your opinion, Dave. but you know, it's a new microphone. So I just don't know, like, if everything's working like the way that it should be. I can definitely hear the hum of my computer, even though it's like under my desk, and the microphone purports to mostly, you know, to mainly pick up directly in front of it. And that is like down and to the right.
I haven't noticed the hum while you're talking at all. So
maybe only I can notice it, 'cause I know it's there.
I can hear it.
Okay. Yeah. See, audiophile Dave can hear it.
but again, that's the difference between the fundamental design of this microphone. It can hear you better when you're leaned back, but that also means it hears everything from that distance.
Yeah. But I'm not leaned back at the moment. I'm sitting comfortably. I'm not hunched over. And it seems, you know, I feel like I sound good in my monitor. Everyone can hear me well. And it works well. How about your mic, Dave?
So, the mic that you've heard me speaking into all evening so far is a Shure SM7B. And it's the content creator's mic that you see everyone use on podcasts and stuff. And I've got it running through a hardware, vocal processor, a channel strip. So I'm going to go ahead and disable all the processing now, so it should sound a little quieter, a little less rich. But this is the microphone just running straight through the preamp. So this is a Shure SM7B. And now I'm going to switch over to the Neat King B2. Now I'm speaking into the Neat King B2.
Oh, that sounds pretty good.
It sounds pretty good,
right? Loud and clear. That's really good.
It's loud and clear. It's warm and rich. So I'm also going to do this. So I've got a keyboard not connected to anything that is about a foot and a half away from the microphone. I'm going to start typing on it.
I heard a space bar. Are you still typing on it?
I'm still typing on it. All right. So there's the keyboard. And then I'm going to switch back to the, now I'm on the Shure SM7B. I'm going to try to get it the same distance away from the keyboard. Now I'm typing on the keyboard.
I don't know if Discord might be.
Yeah, Discord's probably
affecting
not.
This because I didn't hear anything either time.
Anything either time?
I could hear the keyboard both.
I heard the keyboard for like a brief millisecond, and then Discord jumped in and was like, oh no, that's too quiet. That's not actual.
Oh yeah. It lowers the gate automatically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so I've got the gate turned off on Discord.
Oh, okay. But, oh, well.
I heard the space bar the first time and then nothing after that. But the second time I heard you late type.
Yeah.
Well, now I've gone ahead and disabled. So I've got like noise reduction. I'll even turn off automatic gain control. I'll turn off everything in Discord, and we'll try that again. So Shure SM7B, here's a keyboard. Yep. Anybody hear that?
Yep.
All right. Now back over to the Neat King B2. Now I'm speaking into the Neat King B2. Here's a keyboard.
Yep.
Here's a keyboard. So I'm actually pretty impressed with the Neat King B2 because it actually does a pretty decent job at ambient noise rejection. What I hear comparing these two microphones is that in the Neat King B2, I do hear just a little bit more of the room around me. That is to say, I can hear my voice reverberating off of the flat wall beyond my computer screen. I can hear my voice reverberating off of my computer screen and the flat top of my desk. It's tiny, it's small, it's not too noticeable, but if you really pay attention, you can sort of hear there's that little bit of echo that indicates that I am using what's called a condenser microphone, which is what Tim, the Bumblebee 2 you're using is, as opposed to, back to the SM7B now, as opposed to a dynamic microphone, which really, really mostly hears like what is an inch away from it. Like I'm eating this microphone right now, and you don't really hear the reverb in my voice. And you can tell that they sound very different. The SM7B has that, what we call a mid-forward radio. It's that real radio sound.
I'm guessing that's kind of what my blue microphone is like, because I know exactly. If I drift off to the side, it gets really hard to hear me, so I got to stay dead on.
Yes, yes. The blue, your blue micro, your blue Encore is a dynamic mic, just like a Shure SM7B. And that's why it does a really good job at not only making your voice sort of rich and radio ready, but also you don't really hear any ambient, like that little hint of echo or reverb that you would hear.
You don't hear my air conditioner.
And I don't really hear your air. Now, my air conditioner is off. It just switched off. Alexa, set the temperature in the dining room to 70 degrees. We'll switch it back on. We'll see.
You, Mr. Fancy Pants with Alexa.
I need a servant to a digital servant to take care of things for me. All right. Air conditioner's back on now. So you might be able to hear that underneath me. Now there's now a low rumble. Here's what I have to say about the Neat King B2. If you're like a contractor, then you know when you go into a Home Depot, you know what tools are aimed at like the weekend warrior do-it-yourselfers. And you know what tools you can take to a job site and that you can use for years and years and years. And they're going to get the job done well for you. The cheaper weekend warrior tools are the tools that are going to be a hassle to use. There's going to be little niggling problems with them, like, oh, this blade really does not cut as straight as I hoped it would. And, like, it's fine if you're just doing one little job in your own house and it doesn't need to be perfect. But if you're a contractor and someone is paying you for the quality of your work, you want a tool that's going to get it right the first time you do it without you having to go back in and fix those little niggling issues afterward. Microphones are just like that. And there is a certain price threshold that for a long time I've told people they had to spend if they wanted a tool, if they wanted a microphone to use as a tool that is really and truly good enough to record something that you deserve to be paid for, to record like paid professional work. For years and years and years, that threshold has been the $230 Rode NT1A. That's another microphone that a lot of people have heard of. It's a lot, you know, a lot of podcasters and streamers use that microphone, a lot of content creators. That has been the cheapest microphone I could truly say I could do paid professional work on. And in the end product, no one would know the difference. I don't have to doctor it up too much later. I don't have to fix any problems with it. It's a tool that does not introduce any issues. That has changed now with the Neat King B2.
Ooh,
the Neat King ooh. B2 is now the cheapest amount of money you can spend and do real, true, professional-sounding work on. At $60 less than the Rode, Neat has done something pretty cool here. And I got to be honest with you. I know that Neat has partnered with Turtle Beach for their distribution. And this is totally a guess on my part. I have no hard evidence to support this. I believe they might be either selling these at cost or taking a loss on them. So that Turtle Beach can compete directly against Logitech, who now owns Blue Microphones, makers of the Blue Yeti and the Blue Snowball, and other podcasting games microphones. The founders of Blue Microphones. Now, Blue also makes very high-end studio microphones, but the original founders of Blue, they sold the company to Logitech. So Blue is now very much a Logitech, like, you know, Logitech wants them to make gaming peripherals. And so the founders of Blue founded Neat Microphones. So this microphone has a really good pedigree. Like, these are guys that have designed expensive high-end studio grade microphones. They know what the fuck they're doing. I've seen a breakdown, like a teardown of the original Neat King B. This is the two that we're talking about. The original Neat King B used a custom-tuned, but still kind of off-the-shelf Chinese 34-millimeter capsule, just like the Rode NT1A. There is a transformer inside this microphone. Transformers inside a microphone give things weight and heft and dimension, but they also make microphones noisier, scratchier. It produces an inherent amount of background hiss under everything that you do. You can use a more refined, more expensive transformer, and that's clearly what they've done, because this microphone is among the quietest microphones on the planet. It's nearly as quiet as the Rode NT1A by like 1 decibel. It produces 6 decibels of self-noise on its own, which is virtually silent. It's kind of amazing that they can make a microphone this quiet and sell it for only $170. The original Neat King Bee had no corrective EQing in the circuit, and people complained that the top end was a little bit harsh. The treble was a little too, like, crispy and pointy. And that is not the case on this microphone, so I think they have gone in and redone the EQ topography in the circuit to help correct that a little bit. The sound signature of this microphone is not only as good as the $230 Rode NT1A, most reviewers compare it to that microphone's more expensive big brother, the Rode NT1, because that microphone is also a little smoother on the treble end and a little warmer. That this microphone can sound just like a microphone that costs $100 more.
Damn.
And have a transformer inside and be this fucking quiet. That requires R&D. That requires high quality components. And I think Turtle Beach, I think this is a shot across the bow. Logitech and Blue Microphones, I think they must be taking a loss because this microphone is that damn good.
Damn.
Yeah, it's really, really good. The only cons that I can weigh against it really are the things that a lot of other reviewers have pointed out is that it is a huge, big, chunky boy. It is big and heavy and probably would weigh down your typical spring-loaded scissor arm, which is what my SM7B is mounted on. So you know, it's what's called a lollipop condenser, meaning the capsule like sticks out on a little head like a lollipop would. So you've got
that appearance did strike me. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a striking appearance. It probably looks good on camera, but if you're a streamer, it could easily get in the way. It can get in your face. So that could be a knock against it. It's certainly more attractive than the previous Neat King Bee, which had a very deliberate, like black and yellow jacket kind of stripe situation going on. The shock mount that is included with it has a little too much reverberation to it. It doesn't really do a great job of dampening sound, which is unfortunate because it's such a unique shape. You kind of need to use this shock mount. And the included pop filter is pretty useless. Pop filters are not strictly necessary if you position a microphone like this in the correct way. Right now, mine is at my eye level above my face so that my breath is not going right into the capsule. You don't need to use the included pop filter with this thing, nor should you, because it actually colors the sound, will tame the high end a little bit too much and make you sound a little muddy. But those are my only cons that I can level against this microphone, because, again, you could do real paid professional work on this microphone. It sounds realistic. It sounds natural. It sounds rich and warm and pleasant and present and beautiful. And, you know, this compare is very... The only time I could hear a difference, like, when I compared it to the $1,000 Neumann microphone that I do most of my voiceover work on, I can hear the price difference. But that's the realm in which you are paying for, like, enhanced beauty.
Yeah.
At $170, that you can get a microphone with no obvious flaws is remarkable. You have to pay several hundred dollars more to get a microphone that, like, makes your voice sound even better than it does in real life. But if all you want is a microphone that is not going to give you any additional trouble and just sounds wonderful, it's amazing you can get this for $170. I highly recommend it. And in fact, I have already recommended it to two people who, since I received this microphone, people ask me all the time, Dave, what microphone should I buy? I've already recommended to two people that they should just go ahead and buy this microphone. It's that damn good. The price cannot be beat. I guess the only other thing I could knock against it is if you want to do paid professional work, like as a voiceover artist, even though the Rode NT1A is seen as kind of a budget microphone, you know, it's more a prosumer kind of mic, enough professionals use it and have used it for many years that it does have a pretty good pedigree, and no one really knows Neat microphones yet. You know, I certainly respect it, knowing who is behind it, knowing that it's the people that founded Blue. So I know that it's got a good pedigree, but most people haven't heard of the company yet. So I think a lot of people presume. I had someone over in my studio 2 days ago. They saw it and they said, "Oh, N, is that a newer?" And I was like, no, that does not stand for newer. This is not a BM800 or whatever $20 mic you can buy on Amazon. This is much, much better than that. So yeah, I'm wowed by this thing. It is my new go-to recommendation. for people that want to start doing, diving into work that they could potentially get paid for.
Nice. What are your thoughts on Tim's mic, since you're the audiophile, listening to him on there? Like, what are your thoughts on that at the $100 price point?
At $100, so
Dave, you're really quiet. I think because you turned off all your bullshit.
I'm really quiet.
Yeah. Well, you're not as rich.
I boosted you, but
You did. What if I get a little closer here? Well, I can go back into
settings
you're good. Now. And
I think it was because you turned the stuff. I don't know. It was just you were noticeably less rich than you were before. Well, and as soon as Joe said something, it kind of reminded me. I'm like, oh right,
All right. Well, automatic gain control and automatic input sensitivity are back on in Discord. Thank you for letting me know.
Yeah. Probably should have let you know sooner while you were like lathering all that praise upon their microphone.
It's all going to run through a compressor and sound like shit afterwards anyway, so it doesn't matter.
So Tim's microphone is definitely warmer than the Audio-Technica that he was using before. I wish I could hear a completely unfiltered, unprocessed recording of it to give an accurate description. There's still a little fuzziness behind it to me. Yeah. USB microphones are tricky. They're always getting better, which is fantastic. This microphone records at like twice the bit rate as the previous microphone that Tim was using. So like pulling an actual direct recording off of it should sound a lot sharper, warmer, and clearer. I do actually own another Neat microphone. It's one of their older USB microphones. It's called the Neat Widget. I found it for $20 used, and they look funny, so I thought it would be cool for my kids to play with. It's a direct competitor to the Blue Snowball, really, and it's cheaper than the Blue Snowball and sounds 10 times as good.
Nice.
So I am certain that the Bumblebee 2 is not only in that realm, but surpasses it. So for $99, it comes with all the features I would want a $99 USB microphone to include. Zero latency monitoring, that headphone input, so that you can hear yourself. That is something that not all USB microphones have, and that is vital. It is absolutely key. That it records at 24-bit, 96 kilohertz, that set to me says, okay, that's quality. I like everything about it. I like everything about the specs that I'm seeing. I think it's a good price. And I'm sure for $99, then based on the look of this thing, this is certainly meant to compete with a Blue Yeti. I'm certain it sounds better. Yeah. I'm certain for the same price as a Blue Yeti, you're getting a much richer, warmer sound quality.
It is, you know, from my less honed perspective, it's a clear upgrade over what I had substantially, just like hearing it myself. And the usability of it and the features that are just like a couple button clicks away, like right here in front of me. It also has a mute button. I don't know if I mentioned that. That's, I think, pretty normal on USB microphones, just if you need to mute yourself real quick.
Again, so not all of them. It wasn't on your old one.
Yeah. Oh, no, it had a, well, I just had to turn it off.
You had to turn it off. Yeah.
I had to turn it off. But this one, I just hit a button and. I was going to turn it off and say more, but then you can't. But yeah, this mute has a little red light, which is nice. Like, I would flip off my other microphone and then forget to turn it back on, and then no one would hear me make jokes about wrestling for 45 minutes until I realized that. Oh, shit, I've been muted and cracking dingers. But now it's like there's a little red light, so I would know just by glancing at the microphone that, like, oh, shit, I'm muted.
How was setup? Yeah.
I mean, it was easy as fuck. Like, I plugged it into my computer and then it was done.
Nice. Easy to do.
Yeah, just the only thing I had to do, in terms of setting up, it was like, there's the USB cable, just plug it in. I mean, I started setting it up like 10 minutes before we recorded on Tuesday, if not there less. I started hooking it up. Actually, I was pulling out the other one because it was all under Velcro to the back of my desk. and this one I'm running over my desk under my keyboard. Oh, shit. What the fuck did I just do? But like the only thing, because the monitoring was, I just had to tweak the default levels. Basically, I had to tweak my output. I had to tweak well, my input into the computer, so, you know, sure. Brooke could hear me better. I had to tweak the level, like the level on the monitor was very loud right off the bat, and I had to turn that down quite a bit. I usually don't want to hear myself, but I kind of miss it. I turned it all the way down, and I was turning it. I had it up earlier in the podcast, and I'm like, I do kind of like hearing what I sound like.
I need to have mic monitoring so I know like how loud and obnoxious I'm being.
Oh, yeah. I think it's super important. I think it's really important to be able to hear yourself in real time. Well, especially, you know, with a capsule as nice as this.
Yeah. I mean, it's something I'll probably turn on when I am recording something like a podcast, or if I, you know, on those off days when I'm actually running a stream on Twitch, I will turn it on for that. But if I'm just kind of casually like playing games or chatting with people about AEW, I will turn that off. So I don't have to, because I'm not using it for anything resembling a professional purpose at that point.
I feel awkward. I'm the only one who doesn't listen to myself at all.
Hey, you know what? Even some pro voiceover people. I've had some people come over to use my studio, and they're like, "No, I don't use headphones." I'm like, "What? That's nuts."
Headphones. I just don't listen to myself. Yeah.
Does seem weird in that position, but yeah, setup was quick. Just adjusting a few levels, and I was good to go.
David, setup on your end.
So setup on my end. it's just like any other XLR microphone. So it's an XLR output. You need an XLR cable to connect it to a USB audio interface that accepts XLR input. So we're talking a Focusrite Scarlett or a Motu M2 or an Audient Evo or a Rode, one of Rode's new content production, like the Rodecaster Pro 2, that big studio board. I know TC Helicon makes some like streaming board. So anything with an XLR input. And that includes like traditional studio mixers and things, which will all accept XLR input. That's all it took. He's a big heavy boy, so I had to mount him. I had to find a stand that I was confident could support his weight. But even on a smaller stand, like it didn't tip over or anything. So no issues with setup with this microphone for me at all. And I do just want to point out that I'm not actually talking into that microphone anymore. I'm now talking into a Rode NT1A, and they sound identical. I'm sure over Discord, people probably can't tell the difference, but I'm sure no one ever even noticed that I was using a different microphone. And that's part of the point, is that the new King B sounds just as good as the Rode NT1A that you are now hearing me through. I use a lot of outboard equipment. I always use like external preamps and compressors and channel strips. So I've got a whole weird convoluted setup, but really this microphone is as easy as using an XLR cable to plug it into your USB audio interface of choice.
Cool. So if I decide to pick one up, it should be easy as pie for me to switch it out and get going.
You got just as easy as the Blue Encore that you are using right now. It as a condenser microphone, it does require phantom power, but virtually all USB interfaces can supply that, so that's not really a concern. Yeah, just as easy as using any other microphone.
Sweet. Well, it is verdict time. We've chatted enough about the mics. We got to get some verdicts. Tim, the Neat Bumblebee 2 Professional Cardioid USB condenser mic, $99.99. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think it is evident that Dave and I both really like these microphones and find them to be well worth the asking price. But Dave, maybe he changed his mind. it's a clear upgrade, you know, for me. Has some great features. Looks good on the desk. You know, has a nice stand to it. And it can, I guess I should mention, you can detach it from this stand and mount it to a boom arm. It comes with hardware for that. So, yeah, that is also an option for it, which nice. which I may do at some point, just to hang it, dangle it in front of my face.
Nice. And David, the Neat King B2 Cardioid Solid State Condenser XLR Microphone, $169.99. What are your thoughts? Give us your verdict.
The Neat The Neat King Bee 2 gets two huge thumbs up from me. I think it's an incredible value at this price point. I guess the only thing that I'd want to point out, especially maybe for your audience, Joe, is that for me personally, I think that when podcasting or doing a lot of content creation stuff, I think people often benefit from using a dynamic microphone instead of a condenser like the Neat King Bee 2. I am impressed at its ambient noise rejection. I do think it's pretty impressive how much external noise it kind of keeps out and the way it picks up your voice. But I think for a lot of people with rooms, if you've got nothing but hard, flat surfaces in your rooms and flat hardwood floors or something, and you have a really echoey room, microphones like this can inherently be pretty problematic. I'm going to switch over real quick to... This is a Shure SM57, and this is a podcast microphone that I use a lot. You know, it's $100. It's a classic microphone. Every studio recordist has used one of these at some point. And at $99, it's one of those studio standbys. And I think it's a great podcasting microphone. It's pretty comparable to your Blue Encore, Joe. And again, you'll probably hear that there's maybe a little less room reverb, a little less of that like pingy echo in my voice when I talk into a microphone like this. I think for people who podcast or do content creation, you should seriously consider using this kind of microphone instead. However, anyone who might have any ambitions about doing any voiceover work, or if you're able to treat your room a little bit, if you're able to hang up a little bit of foam or moving blankets or anything to sort of pad your situation to help get rid of that little room echoey sound, obviously you can hear the difference. This microphone is warmer, richer, makes my voice sound a little more velvety and beautiful.
I'd fuck you, yeah.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, I mean, you hear the difference there between... And I definitely recommend this microphone, as long as you understand that condenser microphones like this just inherently pick up a little bit more of the room. It's a consideration, but not a deal breaker, and this is the best of its kind for the price.
Nice. Period. And you've already recommended it twice.
I sure have.
So you're making Neat some money already.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Just send the check to David Ottavino. Yeah. Hey, can you put this in a YouTube video that we could share? Yeah, come on.
Oh, I will. That's happening. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, Dave, you said you're going to be working on a video review as well, yeah?
You betcha. So, me and the wife and kids are going away for a week next week. And then once I get back, my first order of business is to get cracking on a YouTube review of this microphone so that I can show it off, compare it to several other microphones in this same price range that it absolutely destroyed.
And you won't have to worry about Discord fucking up the audio at all.
Yeah, and you will hear the exact pure unfiltered recording, so please look forward to that. Joe, we've talked about we're gonna have a version of that video that SML can share, as well as it'll wind up on my own channel as well.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. All right,
my well, God, that is... did we just talk about microphones for a fucking hour?
close. Whew. Yeah. All right, well, Tim and Dave, that is it for you two.
Right.
I don't know, Dave, if you want to hang out through the end of the show to hear about the porn game, but I know Tim's going out.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear about the porn game. I'll stick around.
All right. Well, Tim, do you have any final words?
No, I don't, but yeah. Catch you guys later. Is it just one review? Is it just the porn game?
No, there's a number of other games.
Yeah, all right.
But there is a porn game.
Well, a small number, but
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I will stick around for the porn game, and then I'll say goodnight and go sleep with my kids in the tent.
Well, the porn game's whatever.
Well, the porn game's the last game.
Yeah, porn game's got to go at the end. So Dave, you might want to go out and do your
sports. All right. I'll have to go be a dad, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for having me on the show. I look forward to next time. I would love to be back sometime.
Yeah, we'd love having you on anytime, man. Just hit me up and be like, hey, I'm bored.
Rad.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hey. Aki, Jacob, lovely talking to you, gentlemen.
Yeah. See ya.
Good night.
You too.
Peace.
All right, ready for more reviews?
I think he thought I was a guy.
No, I think it was just a slip of the tongue.
Oh, okay.
Giggity.
All right, yeah. Giggity. I'm ready then.
Jacob, are you good to go?
Good,
because you're not first. First game to talk about tonight is Digimon Survive, developed by Hyde Inc., published by Bandai Namco Entertainment. Released July 29th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $59.99. After getting lost on a school trip, Takuma... I can't say the last name. Finds himself transported to a world inhabited by ferocious foes and new allies. Join Takuma and his friends as they fight their way back home. Craft your story in this thrilling visual novel with turn-based combat. Aki, tell us about your time with Digimon Survive.
Okay. Digimon Survive takes a very different avenue than... For me, all I've ever experienced of Digimon really was the TV show. I haven't played any of the other games. But from what I've heard about the other games, it takes place in the standard universe that you see in the TV shows and the like. This one... None of these people know what Digimon is. They've never heard the term, so it's very different from every other piece of media, realistically at this point, that I've seen of Digimon. And you play as this young man, and you're with your entire class on a field trip to see some sights at some abandoned-ass school out in the middle of fucking nowhere. And you and a very small handful of the student body that's there end up getting teleported to, where there are Digimon. And
teleported to,
Yeah, it's just, now I feel like I'm the Tall Man Taylor. Now I feel bad. oh, God, no. And upon arriving, all of you get attacked, and each of you meets your own personal Digimon. You get the most famous one, Agumon, which was the very first one for Tai from the very first TV show. It's one of the most popular ones. It's a little dinosaur that shoots fire. It's super cute. I love it. And a lot of the game after that point is a lot of visual novel, which a lot of people are very upset by for some reason. I don't really understand why.
A lot of people weren't expecting this to be a visual. I think it's because the previous Digimon games were more like action RPG.
Yeah, but like it's getting trounced in like the Steam system and stuff. And it's like it literally has visual novel and has had visual novel as one of the tags for it the entire time. No. People were like, I didn't expect this to be a visual novel. Well, then you need to learn fucking read.
Now, that could be kind of like how they sold it. Like, they didn't sell it properly, kind of like when Brutal Legend came out and everyone thought it was just straight up action game. And then they played it and it's like, fuck, where'd the strategy elements come from?
I guess. I don't know, because I don't actually remember any of the trailers for this game, to be honest. So I don't know how it was. But the other half of this, obviously, your Digimon, they have to fight things, or else this would be one of the worst Digimon games known to man. So there is a tactical turn-based strategy part to the game where you battle evil Digimon and kick the shit out of them, hopefully. Because you might have noticed something about the title. It says Digimon Survive. Not mm-hmm. all of the Digimon are probably going to survive. So that's fun. And it goes to such a degree that obviously if Agumon were to, you know, capsize, it's game over, because that is specifically your Digimon. But you can also, right at this, somewhere during chapter one, because there's a prologue and then a chapter one, you get access to free battles. So you can go play as much of the actual gameplay of the game as you desire. If you absolutely abhor the visual novel sections, you can just go straight to that and just play that over and over and over until you're blue in the fucking face. But one of the mechanics in it is some of the Digimon can actually talk to other Digimon during battle, and it just asks you three questions, and you have one of four choices for each one that you get to pick. And that either raises or lowers basically an affection meter for that individual Digimon. And if you get it all the way to the max or what have you, it will say, hey, what do you want? And you can either say, I want an item, where they'll give you some random item. So far, mostly I've gotten healing items that I don't fucking need. Or I've been power leveling like crazy because I can, because I'm one of those types of people. Or you can ask it to be your friend. And if it's, it doesn't always accept. Sometimes it just chooses to leave. It chooses, well, I don't want to fight you, but I don't want to be on your fucking team either. And then just leaves. But other times it says, okay, I'll be your friend. And then it joins you. That Digimon can die. If it falls in battle, it's gone. It's kaputsy. You fucked up. So yeah, that's really fun, I guess. I really feel bad knowing that all these Digimon can die, and I keep saying Pokemon. very different series. The worst part is I like Digimon significantly more than Pokemon, but I hear Pokemon so much more often, I'm used to saying that instead. But the rest of the game, the visual novel part, it's not just a kinetic one where you just read through from start to end. You actually have choices throughout it. Some of the choices are things that you're talking about between yourself and other of the main cast characters, i.e. your other classmates and shit. And that can raise your affection levels with them. And the higher your affection rating is with that individual, if you have their Digimon in a fight with your Digimon, obviously fighting together, they can sometimes give you extra, you know, they'll give you XP, which is used to use your special attacks, or they'll occasionally give you extra health out of nowhere, or they'll give you some extra damage for an attack or two. So it's good to do that, but there's also choices to be made outside of that as well that impact the direction of the entire game. You are expected to play at least two times through. I would suggest four, because there's four endings. Some of the choices are moral, some of them are harmony and wickedness. And wickedness is not like, oh, let's just leave these people behind, or oh, let's kill everything. No, one of the very first wicked choices you can make in the game is, can we stop and rest here for a little bit? Because what? Yeah, that's a wicked choice to request to stop and rest for a little bit. That's some evil, wicked thing. It's so weird. It's like they arbitrarily just chose stuff. The great thing is you don't have to question which one of the choices are which. Because you have a left choice, a top choice, and a right choice. The left one is always moral, the top one is always wicked, and the right one is always harmony. So, yay! And as you increase that, which you can check in your stats menu at any time you want, it'll tell you what you have in each one of them. As you raise them all, at a certain point in the game, you get to go choose a track. And that track is whichever one of those is high. I think you need like 25 in each or so, something like that, in order to open a pathway. And there's over 100 choices you can make before that shows up. And then you choose out of whatever ones are highest, whatever have that are past that threshold, you can choose that way to go down that path. And then that's when things like Wicked actually come into being, realistically speaking. So you get three different endings there, and then there's a true ending that you get through. I have no fucking clue. Because I haven't even beaten
it. It's good that you don't know, because then you would give it away.
Yeah. I haven't gotten any of the endings yet. I'm about halfway through, maybe, give or take. I've been really focusing on just getting as many versions of the same Digimon as I can, because you can upgrade them to the next version of it. Theoretically, I can probably actually just get those Digimon to agree to be my pals too. They're Digivolutions, hate how they say that. It's so hard. You can probably find those later in the game as well. I know you can for a number of them, but I'm like, kind of want to get enough of the lowest level version and then just raise all of them up, because I like to go about doing everything the absolute hardest, dumbest fucking way possible, I think is realistically what it is.
Makes sense.
as you do combat, all of your characters, you know, that are in it level up. Obviously, the ones who aren't in the actual fight don't get diddly. If you get the Digimon to either join you or leave, you get less experience than if you were to, say, I don't know, kick the shit out of them and beat them. So that's something to keep in mind if you're like, okay, I want a whole bunch of this one so I can get every different evolution. Cool, but I don't want any of this one. Always beat the shit out of that other one then, because you might get an item. Usually you won't, but you'll get much more XP. So that's useful, because then you can, you know, get stronger characters. You do have to be a certain level. Each Digimon has to be a certain level, I believe, in order to do their evolutionary step, which you can activate and deactivate in the middle of combat, which is really cool. But you also need another item somewhere to get them as well. They're not particularly easy to find. So there's that. And later evolutions definitely require the items. So yeah, there's you got plenty of stuff to farm in here if you want. Or if you really want to, you can probably blast through this, because in each individual battle, you can decide how difficult you want it to be. It goes from very easy to very hard, I believe. And you don't get any different rewards for beating it on any of these. Same rewards regardless. So if you really wanted, you could drop this down to very easy and just mostly steamroll the game. You will need to farm a little bit at the beginning, but it wouldn't take long, and then just steamroll the rest of the game if you really want.
It's not bad for the people who just want to focus on the story.
Yeah, so, you know, if you really, really want to beat this as fast as possible, you can probably beat it in 6 to 10 hours. If you're like me and you're like, I want to get everything because I'm stupid, then you're looking at a lot more time, because I've already put about 15 hours into this, and I'm nowhere close to finishing the game, I don't think. So
nice. Well, the game is sitting at $60. What are your thoughts on it?
I really like this. If you absolutely abhor visual novels, then this probably isn't going to be for you, because there is a whole bunch of that. There's some combat, but there's a whole bunch of visual novel in this, unless you are just like, I'll just get through the very beginning of the visual novel section until I open the free fighting, and then I'll just do that forever. You're only going to fight a very small selection of the Digimon, because in order to open more of them to fight, you have to get further into the game, which means a lot more visual novel stuff. So if you hate visual novels, probably not for you. Just a guess. If you're fine with visual novels, you know, the tactical turn-based strategy stuff is exceptionally easy, so you're gonna enjoy this. And they're Digimon, they're all adorable, so yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. I think it's worth the money.
Cool. My verdict, no Psyduck, deny it.
That's a
but it's Digimon.
I know.
You, I know. Hurt my soul.
I mean,
I have very low standards.
Do you also deny other games because they don't have Psyduck?
Yes.
Duh. Super Mario Galaxy. Deny. I can
deny it. No Psyduck.
King of Fighters.
Deny it. No Psyduck.
Army of Two.
First Ooh. One, second one, or third one?
Second. All of them.
Second one's a good
no
one.
No Psyduck.
Yeah, but there's no Psyduck in it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Psyduck isn't the only... The only factor, it's just a big determining factor. Next you game know, to talk like about is Arcade Paradise. Fuck you, I do what I want.
This is my crappy show.
This is my awful show. I do what I want on my awful show. Anyway, next game to talk about is Arcade Paradise, developed by Nosebleed Interactive, published by Wired Productions, released August 11th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Welcome to Arcade Paradise, the 90s retro arcade adventure game. With the keys to the family laundromat, Ashley decides to transform the business and give the sleepy town of Grindstone something to get excited about. Stay one step ahead of your father, manage and invest profits, and build your very own Arcade Paradise. Jacob, what's going on in Arcade Paradise?
So pretty much in this game, you just turned 18. Your family is just like, oh, you can't do anything, so... Your father, who is a very successful entrepreneur, is like, oh, yeah, I've got this laundromat. Like, I forgot that I even own it, like, because it makes, like, no money whatsoever. So he doesn't really give a shit about it. And he's just like, well, you're in charge of it now, and you're, like, you need to show that you're able to, like, pull a profit and turn things around and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Usual stuff. So you get in there, and it's dirty as hell. And like it's just like the toilet's clogged. It's like literally one of the first things you have to take care of. And you pretty much just have to repair, revitalize. But then also there's an arcade in the back, and there's like a couple of machines. And you know, if more people start using the laundromat, then you have all this extra money just lying around where you can. As it turns out, you could buy up new arcade machines. And then you can get like expansions. And, you know, as you get more profits, you can get more arcade machines. But then, like, and one of the nice things that you can play them, and they're all very familiar, but not like they're not even like knockoffs. Like, one of them is, you know, very much like a Pac-Man thing, but it's also like a Grand Theft Auto nice, like, tip of the hat. There's other ones that are kind of like it's more like Space Invaders kind of meets Choplifter in a way. But there's like a bunch of different games, which that part I was pleased with. But then to get all this kind of stuff, you also have to put in the work. And so you're stuck there with the laundromat. And so very early in the game, it becomes very grindy, and it ends up being like a household chore simulator. Like you put the laundry in the washing machine, wait for that to get done, pick up trash around the laundromat, you know, throw it in the dumpster, you know, take care of all the hoppers, you know, go deposit your money, check your email, do all this kind of stuff, take the laundry out of the washer, put it in the dryer, wait for that. And then, you know, once that's done, you fold up the laundry, get it ready for customers to go. But you only have a limited amount of time to do all this kind of stuff. And so, like, the laundromat's open from, like, 8 a.m. to, I think it's, like, 11 p.m. or something like that. And you can stay later, but, like, by 2 a.m., if you have not left, then... you can't do anything else in there other than play video games, which, like, it is possible for you to, like, pass out in the laundromat and then, like, just wake up the next day like, oh, yeah, I guess I should go about work then. And there are upgrades for various things. I mean, like, some of the arcade games actually have upgrades within them, like power-ups and stuff like that you can buy, depending on how well you do. But then there's also goals that you have to meet every day. And by meeting these goals, you'll get extra currency, like a different kind of currency. So you can buy everything in the British pound sterling for whatever reason. And that like operates through like this kind of like eBay website. And you can just like you can get this tech manual that like you'll be able to repair machines a lot quicker. You can hire an assistant manager. You can. Get recycle bags that will carry more trash and stuff like that, so you don't have to make as many trips to the dumpster. All this kind of stuff. And so there is a lot to do in this game. But for me, like, what was killing it was that, first off, I found that, like, the time went really quickly, even if I was just doing nothing but, like, stuff around the laundromat. And of course, like, the whole point of that is that you have to buy the upgrades so then you have more time to do stuff so that you can move quicker, all those kind of upgrades. And it's very grindy. And I'm sure that, you know, eventually Like once you start buying all these upgrades, the game will move a hell of a lot quicker. But during like the 5 hours that I was playing of this game last night, my wife, like for most of the time, she was like, yeah, you could be doing this at home, right? Like you could go down to the basement, put on some laundry, go do some video games. And it's just like, unlike, well, the thing is, like, I was agreeing with her. I'm like, yeah, I probably could do this. But it's just like, unlike other simulator games that we've been playing as of late, like Lumberjack, Power Washer, stuff like that, this one literally just feels like household chores the game. And on top of it, it's fairly grindy. And it's just, I don't know. Like, I just... It's a weird concept, especially like when you have to explain it to other people, that it's just like, yeah, this is shit I do around the house anyway. And it's just, I don't know. It didn't.
I like that you're like focusing on the chores, but not really the retro mini games.
Well, cause the thing is that it's just like, as I found out, it's just like, I ended up having to focus more on the laundromat than being able to play the games. Like, there, as I said, there's the Pac-Man clone, there's kind of like the Space Invaders clone, there was a top-down shooter, it wasn't like Metal, like, the characters were similar to like Metal Slug, but I'm trying to think of like any arcade game that I know that, I don't know, it was kind of like a Contra-esque game. Like, there's also a jukebox that you can buy that'll play music throughout your place, and you can buy more records, so it has, like, a, you know, bigger selection to choose from, which that in itself I thought was pretty neat. There is also, like, a puzzle game, kind of like a... I guess it's actually kind of... It's a match 3 game, and... I don't remember what exact, I don't know like what the main interface was like kind of copying, but like the game itself is a match 3. And it's just, yeah, you just go through all this kind of stuff and you can keep picking up more, retro mini games. And it's just, I want to play these games, but unfortunately I think you have to get I think you actually just have to get the laundromat to a point where it almost runs itself, like that assistant manager guy that you can hire. And then once that occurs, you can pretty much just play the games at your leisure. But getting there is a pain in the butt, in my opinion.
This is why I gave you this game.
Damn it.
What'd you say?
So this is why I gave you this game. I had a feeling that this was going to be a lot of, you know,
it's not fun right from the get-go. Stuff.
Yeah, that's why I like when they just give me the ability to get infinite money so I can just fuck around. Because I can't do the, like, oh, I need to do this for, like, 10, 20 hours constantly all damn the entire time. Like, that would drive me nuts.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, the arcade games were fun, but I had to constantly keep putting them down because there's a load of laundry I have to go take care of, whether I have to move it from the washing machine or, like, you know, fold everything up really quickly. Occasionally you'll get the message on your little wristwatch thing telling you that the toilet's clogged again.
Which you have a lot of experience with.
Honestly, as the place has grown in popularity, it's almost becoming a daily thing.
I mean, you poop which a lot I was, and you clogged the toilet.
No. I know that. I know you were trying to make a joke at my expense about like how much I poop, but in the game,
I don't know. I think he succeeded.
Yeah, Arcane anyway. Paradise is $19.99. What are your thoughts?
It has the thing is it's like the business. I think it has a lot of potential, but you really have to be okay with putting in the work for it. It's grindy. And I know that that's going to turn off some people. But I think like the collection of arcade games in there is pretty cool. You just have to get to the point where the arcade or your laundromat can run itself to get there, which could take a while. Like, I mean, I guess you could just fuck around and play in your arcade all day and like not take care of anything in the laundromat. But I couldn't allow myself to do that. I just, yeah.
So. All right. Well, next game to talk about is Gigapocalypse.
Did I say whether I actually recommended it?
I don't know. You just mumble and
you did not.
You sigh a lot.
Okay. I would say try it. As I said, it's very grindy. Some people are going to like it. Some people aren't. So, you know, try it.
All right. Next up is Gigapocalypse, developed by Goody Gameworks, published by HeadUp, released August 4th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, and PS5 for $9.99. As a little kid picking up your dragon toy, spewing fire feels powerful, and destroying everything is one of the best childhood memories for many of us. Now you become that giant monster in Gigapocalypse, a 2D pixel art destruction game inspired by classical kaiju movies such as Godzilla and King Kong and the game classic Rampage. Jacob, what's going on in Gigapocalypse?
So this one's actually like a mix between two games. On one hand, it's very much a game kind of like as I said, Rampage. It also reminds me a lot of like those side-scrolling like arcade beat-em-ups. I'd say probably closer to Final Fight than anything. But with this, so on one hand, you've got the, like, you know, you're walking around the city and beating crap up, and you have energy meters, and you can do more powerful attacks, like to knock down buildings, stomp on humans, all that kind of stuff, blow everything up around you. However, like, your energy levels, like, the more you hit stuff, the more rage you get, and then your attacks can become more powerful. But the thing is, the more you attack, your energy goes down, and it becomes a weird balancing thing. But that's actually kind of the point of the game, because after your character dies, it goes into the second part, which is very much this kind of like Tamagotchi thing, where you're like raising up this like little baby monster, and like you have to feed it, you have to pet it, play with it, pick up its poo, stuff like that. And you can also decorate its living space. And with these decorations, some of them will actually affect your creature and how it grows and like what abilities it has. So then when you go back in to start destroying the city all over again, your character can theoretically live longer, attack more, have different attacks, all this other kind of stuff. And there is like initially there's only like three monsters you can choose from, but there's more that you can unlock as you progress farther through the game. And then there's just like different areas that you can rampage through. I mean, that's what it is. And then of course, like there's like little bosses that eventually you'll have to beat, but it's a lot of, you know, destroy the city, get killed, you know, spend some time raising your little monster again, and then going back and doing it again. It's fun and it's amusing, but it gets grindy real quick. So I don't know if Aki just passed on like both games that she thought would be grindy and handed them off to me.
I didn't even get this one. So,
oh, all right. So one out of two ain't bad. So yeah. And it's just, it's okay. Like it's not going to be for everyone, but I do appreciate, like, I don't know. It just felt like different. Like, it felt like somebody was actually trying to, like, try something new instead of just giving us, like, the same old, you know, platformer stuff that we frequently see. And so with Gigapocalypse, it's just, it's not the best, but it's engaging enough to keep going. It's just, watch out for the grind. But I dug it. I'd actually give it a recommend.
Cool. All right, well, that's it for you, Jacob.
Thank God.
Are you going to stick around for the porn game?
I am not going to stick around for the porn game.
Going to do tweets?
Maybe. I'm also going to go poop.
You motherfucker. Did you not poop before the show?
No, I was actually like sleeping before the show because I kind of feel like crap. And like that's why I didn't talk during the interview the microphone stuff, because I actually wasn't sure if I was going to throw up or not.
So you should have threw up on air.
Well, the thing is that if I was going to, I know that you would have wanted me to, so I would have. But you know, like, I know that you guys also don't want to hear a ton of like, in the background, so I muted myself.
That's fair. All right, yeah. Well, we got one more game to talk about, so you could head on out of here.
Okay. For Fake Nugent.
Fuck you.
All right, one final game to talk about. George, take it away.
SML After Dark.
That is right. We are going back to After Dark territory with Treasures of Nadia, developed and published by NLT Media, released February 16th on Steam for $14.99. Venture awaits in Cape Vedra, a town of treasures, mysteries, and beautiful women. The epic story-rich experience features over 200... This epic rich story experience... I can't fucking... It's the easiest write-up in the world, and I can't get through it. This epic story-rich experience features over 2,500 animations, mostly naughty ones, and a world filled with collectible treasures, booty calls, and an abundance of fun secrets and mysteries to uncover. Aki, what's going on in Treasures of Nadia?
Okay, you guys might remember last week how I did Lust Epidemic. Well, this is the next game in that series of games. I think it's supposed to be a trilogy, but I'm not 100% sure. And in this, you're not playing as Brad from the first game. You're playing as a new, as some new schmuck that you get to name in this one. I don't even know what his default name is, to be honest, because I was like, fuck that. If everyone's going to be saying it, screaming someone's name, it's going to be fucking mine. It's nice. And in this one, you've come back home from college because your father has passed away. He is a world-famous adventurer and treasure hunter named Idaho. And if you don't get that reference, I am so, so sorry. You probably shouldn't be listening to this. And yes, you've spent your entire life hoping to become a treasure hunter too, even though I'm pretty sure you're at school for business. So, so he's left you his old house, which is a fucking dump, as well as a treasure. The treasure being some sort of crystal thing that houses someone in it who helps you do stuff in the game. Basically, it's the hint system. And you decide, well, I'm going to find treasure on this here island because some famous treasure hunter showed up here and bought a house. So now I'm going to find the treasure. Whatever the hell this bitch is looking for, I'm going to find it. I'm going to have a lot of sex along the way. And so the lust potion from Lust Epidemic is in here. As an item that is being sold to the people here. And there you also get to see Brad, as well as a couple of the girls from the first game. But otherwise, they're tertiary characters at best that show up a couple times in the game. The rest of the time, it's just, you're searching for treasure, trying to make some money, and trying to get in every woman's pants that exists on the island, and you do succeed. You've very much succeed. Jesus, there's so much sex in this game. It is insane. Like, I was expecting, obviously, it's a sex game. I expect some sex in it. Holy crap, this blew me out of the fucking water. There is so much. you'll go play the game. Again, this is another point-and-click adventure. I guess I should point that out. A good chunk of this one is finding treasures in these couple of areas that respawn continuously, so you can make money to buy upgrades for your house and upgrades for your character and, clothing items, stuff like that. Stuff that you need to get girls naked, basically. It's great. Yeah, but between all of this, there's also story bits, and almost every single one of the story bits, your character gets laid. It is fantastic. There is a wide range of women this time. You got technically you have the Mother Superior, who you saw a picture of in the first game. She was one of the people that led that seminary school from the first game, and she had left before the events of the first game. She's here. So you get to have sex with that older lady. And then, you know, there's other college age girls that you can be with. And then there's a plenty of mom characters. So if you like your MILFs, you definitely have MILFs. You have some peak MILFdom here.
I have a way with words. Yeah.
And, yeah, this one, the map is about 3 times larger than it was in the first game, at least. Maybe even bigger than that. It's fucking huge. And you don't have access to all of it because you need to get upgrades so you can travel through the area more. And basically, your character ends up figuring out what the treasure of this island's supposed to be. And you start trying to get to it, try to figure out where it is and get to it, because your character's kind of, what's the right term? Really fucking stupid. Yeah, I think that's the right term. So, you know, you're basically the entire game, you're shadowing people who actually know what the fuck they're doing and taking that information to further it, to be like, okay, now I found this thing that you were looking for because I took all the information you had and basically stumbled cock first into it somehow. It's pretty fantastic. This game is less about the main story than it is about the character interactions between everybody, because a number of these characters have their own problems, their own personalities, and it's really about just dealing with their shit in order to get in their pants, basically. To make them like you, so you can have sex with them. It's great.
So I gotta ask something. I don't normally call out how long people have played games on the show. Some games
it took me that full time, just so you're aware.
Some games, you know, some games we only have the ability to put like an hour into it, like a Rattlake game. You only need like an hour to put into that game. You put 45 hours in this fucking game.
Yep.
45 hours.
Yep, I 100%ed that bitch. Yes. The first game, Lost Epidemic, took 21 hours to beat. This game, quite a bit bigger than that. Like, significantly. Like, extremely so. I was expecting it to be about the same size. It is so much larger. And I've spent very little extra time in this game beyond just getting it done. And again, this was with a walkthrough helping me so I could get it done. Oh, still took me this long. I may have cut it down by a handful of hours, maybe like 4 or 5 if I had followed the walkthrough in its entirety. Because thankfully, this game, there's not a lot of stuff where it's like, oh, I have to go look for this person. I have no idea where the fuck they are. Usually, it's pretty kind of obvious. They might be like, okay, I'll meet you at the bar. Well, guess what? Guess where they fucking are? At the bar with Tasha, one of the hottest chicks in the game. Anyways, so yeah.
I have a feeling if I don't interrupt, you're going to just keep talking about this game. So I'm just going to ask, $15, what do you think about it?
Yes, this is so worth beyond $15. So yeah, I'm 100% for this. This game is fucking huge and it will take you some time to beat. So yeah, I'm for it.
Nice. All right, well, that is it for this episode. Another long one.
Yeah, and I managed to complete some more of my Gunpla, so yay.
Good times.
Yeah.
Good times. Big thanks to Tim for coming on, and to Dave Ottavino for coming on, chatting about the microphones. Big thanks to Neat for sending those our way to check out. Thanks to all the devs and publishers that we cover on the show. We wouldn't be able to do this stupid shit without you. Music, yes. This episode, we're going to play something from Off Campus. We'll see what the hell, David created all those years ago. And, any final words?
I can't wait to review the next set of porn games.
SML After Dark.